as I get closer to where he went off the road, I see a big black shape in the middle of the road walking. So I have to slam on my brakes and try to swerve myself because this thing is walking in the center of the road. Because I don't see a head and I don't see arms. I just see a really big, tall person, like big, thick legs and a big, thick torso. And they're moving very funny.
But to be honest, I wish I had have seen some of her vulnerability. I wish I'd have seen her in that space so that I would have language.
And he says, no. That's not why you're angry. That's why you're mad. Mad is on the surface. Mad is a surface emotion. You're angry. And anger is deep. That cuts to your soul. You are an angry young man. And I couldn't answer. I then had come to realize over the next course of a few hours, I'm musing to myself, and I realize I've been a victim my whole life. That's why I'm so angry. And over the course of the next 19 months, this man changed my life. He helped me to realize about processing emotion and how to forgive myself and forgive others. And that's where the metamorphosis really began for me. And I learned how to, I'm a survivor, right? I know how to survive.
I was understood for the first time in my entire life. And when I read those things and I learned, quote unquote, those things about myself that I had known forever, but never really had the semantics for, I couldn't unlearn them. Like I heard this quote years ago and it resonated with me so much. And it's like, you can choose to look the other way, but you can never again say you didn't know.
Hey, welcome back everyone to the show in 2024 and the long-awaited season 2. I hope you like the new intro. I've been pretty busy in the studio talking with new friends and guests that have a lot of real experiences to share. If you'd like to be on the show, send me an email at verbalecho@gmail.com. So without any further delay, let's get to it with this episode's guests. Hey, happy March, everyone. I can't believe it's already here. My guest today is Dani James. She's an adventure travel blogger currently living in Sweden. She has a past experience that includes recovery from a traumatic brain injury, hitchhiking up the West Coast, and weed farming in California. I'll let her go into it all. So here we go for today's episode. Today I have Dani, and I'm going to let her pronounce her name. She's from Sweden, and she's a travel blogger, has a great travel business. She's an author. And she has some really interesting experiences to share. So welcome, Dani.
Thanks for having me. So my name is Dani Rosenblad James. Originally, I'm from South Dakota, but my husband whisked me away to Sweden. Thus, I have a Swedish last name mixed with just James.
That happens, I guess. So you're in Sweden now. So what brought you all the way across the ocean? Your husband?
Yep, it was love. He did this great trick and he showed me Sweden during the best month, which is June. So it was pretty much all days of just sun, everyone's partying, having fun, everything looks beautiful. Well, our first year here, the winter is the exact opposite, all cold and dreary and dark. So that was difficult. But overall, I love Sweden.
I can imagine. Is that what spurred you to try traveling more, was getting away from those really long winters?
It was actually my first solo trip to meet up with my husband, who was my friend at the time, and that was to Peru and Bolivia.
You mentioned before we started recording that you were the survivor of a traumatic brain injury. And so I was wondering if you could tell us about that experience and what happened.
Yeah, so After my trip to Peru and Bolivia, I think it was 6 months later, I wanted to start heading to Northern California because I was working up there. And I hit black ice in Wyoming. And I felt a little sketched out. I was like, oh, I better stay at a hotel. So me and my dog stayed the night in the hotel. And then around, I think, 10 or 11 in the morning, I started driving. And I maybe drove half an hour to an hour longer. And I just kept thinking, if the roads were this bad, they would have closed them, right? I guess not. So I came up to a semi truck that had blocked all of the lanes. Visibility level was less than a mile, black ice, so you can't really stop. And all I remember is going, oh no. And then I must have went on autopilot. I must have tried to like make my own lane or something. What ended up happening? My small truck turned into a convertible without a top. And it also gashed open my skull, and my truck did a whole 360. So I ended up getting two bruises in my brain and two concussions. And overall, all this stuff happening, my dog was fine. So I'm really thankful about that. So what ended up happening is the sheriff that found me had to get me helicoptered to Salt Lake City, Utah. And I was in ICU for 10 days. And I didn't have to have a blood transfusion because it was so cold. So my blood stayed in. And then they had to induce me in a coma. Let's see, fast forward a little bit. I had to relearn how to walk, how to use my brain, how to do common sense steps here and there, like being in a kitchen and remembering to use oven mitts, or remembering how to turn off the stove, just things that I say is, common sense. So yeah, that's a kind of in a brief summary.
Yeah, what? Wow. I live in Colorado, so I know kind of those road conditions can change so fast, or they can seem one way and then they're just not. But yeah, I'm so glad you're here to tell your story and that you recovered and that you seem wonderful and happy and gosh, just feeling gratitude and fortunate to live through that. And yeah, what a terrible experience to have to go through. So you mentioned also that you were working in California as a weed farmer. Now, was that before your injury or after?
It was a little mix of both. Most of the time, it was before the accident. That's where I was actually driving to work was Northern Cali, when I had this accident happened. And I had it in my mind that, oh, I have to get back to work. I have to get back to work. So I think it was after a few months of healing, I finally was able to leave and I went straight to that was not such a good idea on my part because an hour of work a day, and that work is very hard labor. I guess a lot of people probably don't know that, but I mean, you're working with these for like 12 hours a day. And yeah, since I only could do 1 hour, it was really hard. It was actually my husband that was my friend at the time who literally saved me from myself. Like he would put me to bed and tell me, stay there. And then he would go work. And then he would find me, like I snuck back up to work or something. And he'd find me and he'd have to scold me, put me back to bed. So he got really good at watching shows with me and stuff.
Sounds like a gym. Yeah. So the whole weed farming industry, I know I've seen the like there was a documentary on, I think it was on Netflix. I think it was like, is it like Murder Mountain or something? Were you in that same area, like Humboldt County? Such a sketchy area. So, and you had an experience there, and I was wondering if you could share that.
So I actually haven't had that bad of experiences there. It's more of the stories that happened on the property before I came. Like one of them was, I think, 2 years before I started working out there. And it sounded like the guys that came must have been tweakers or something. Well, one must have been more on the violent side because he had a flame torch. And he held that up to some of the trimmers' faces and threatened them to, because they wanted the weed. So they ended up getting the weed from them that time. And then they came the year a year later, and I guess they must have not got their information correctly on the property anymore because they were in full body armor. They came with a van, and we had a metal gate that time that you couldn't just blow off or anything, like how it was made. It was specific to not be able to be taken off so easily. And so they were stuck at that gate. And I guess the workers at that time were able to call the sheriff. There's only like two sheriffs in that town. And so the one sheriff came. So it was like a showdown with the one sheriff and then these three guys in full body armor. And what ended up happening is they finally left. Then we hear a little later that one of those guys shot one of the other guys. Probably because the information was bad and he was upset. And I think that guy ended up dying and just like, wow, that's where I worked.
That's crazy. I guess I'm wondering, because we've all seen and heard stories about that area and how dangerous it is and how many sketchy characters are running those operations. Do you think it's changed any since everything is legal now, or do you think it's worse or?
I think it probably has changed just because I know since it has gone legal, a lot of the actually good people that had it as a family business went out of business because they couldn't afford to pay all the taxes that now have to be put on top of it. So, I mean, it's good and bad that it went legal, but I mean, since it kind of destroyed some local business people, that kind of is a bit sad.
So is it mostly just major companies that are running the operations now instead of a bunch of mom and pop farms?
It seems like that's pretty much what's happening. I mean, before it even became legal, I think it was Marlboro bought a lot of acres of property beforehand, and then it became legal. So, kind of obvious what they were already planning.
Wow. That's crazy. I'm not surprised. Not surprised. Corporate, anytime you can turn anything into a corporation, these corporations just take over everything. Yeah, that's crazy. So did you see instances of like all of these workers disappearing when you were there?
I maybe had met some that had disappeared. When I would go in the small town, I would always hear some of the stories of what happened to some of these girls here and there, because it was, of course, mostly women. There was this one girl that ended up going to one to become a trimmer. And I think what I heard from that was she ended up working out of a box, where she pretty much was stuck in this box all the time. And then there was other ones where they would only hire females and they all had to be topless when they were working. And then there's other ones, I can't remember exactly what they were called, but it's like the ladies would get paid to have sex with the owner of the property. And like that's all she would do there. Yeah, there's a lot of sketchy stories, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely doesn't sound like a safe job. So is that what made you step away from that?
Well, the people that I actually worked with were good people. The reason I stepped back was that I was trying to heal from my accident, and I realized that this wasn't what I wanted to do anymore. I mean, it was a great experience, but it wasn't something I wanted to do for the rest of my life. There's still so much I wanted to try out or explore. And yeah, that same year, there was a huge rampage of thievery happening throughout the area as well. And I think it was because there was lack of water happening at that time too. So people were getting a little crazy more than usual.
Yeah, and that hasn't gotten any better with all the drought. What year was that?
Oh man, now I gotta think. I think that was 2014. Yeah,
Not
because it was
really
the
too long ago.
same year as my accident.
Right. So your accident was that same year.
Yep.
Wow. What a interesting story. You mentioned that you kind of kicked off traveling with hitchhiking.
Yeah.
And you had your dog, and tell us a little bit about that. How was that experience hitchhiking? Did you do it from California, or was it all over the country?
So that actually started when I had a little disagreement with my sister when we were in Washington, and I was like, I'm done. And I just started hitchhiking from there. And so it was me, my dog, and then my guy friend, which you would say that's your road dog. So we hitchhiked the West Coast. We did the whole West Coast and stayed under bridges sometimes at parks. Yeah, it was quite interesting.
What was your favorite part? You went from Washington all the way down to Southern California, or?
Yep. I think my favorite was being on the 101. And then
so
I
pretty.
And I really loved Oregon. Oh, what was the name of that one? I think it was starts with an M. Oh, I can't remember. It's a small town that's right off the water. And I think
I think I know where. Yeah. Well, I went to Oregon one time and I drove that road. I think I is it Medford?
No. I think it's even smaller than that. I can't remember exactly, but when we were there, there were still all kinds of people there. And then there's this one house that was on the corner, and that was known as like the traveling house, because it was a lot of hitchhikers and people that traveled and were unconventional. And then the rest of the town seemed to either like them or hate them. And nowadays it sounds like that town has pretty much turned into more of a business town, where it's people that have money are the ones that are staying there more than the others. That's a little disappointing.
So you went all the way down to Southern California. Did you ever do any of the PCT, or was it mostly just via roads and Pacific
Coast?
It was
pretty much just the roads, following the roads. When I did it, it's like after my hitchhiking days, I've learned of all these hikes and trails, and now I'm like, oh man, I wish I would have, but I didn't even know about it then.
Right. You evolved.
Yeah.
So how did you get into hitchhiking then? I mean, into hiking, not hitchhiking, but hiking. How did you get into that in Sweden?
Let's see. I think I've always been interested in it. It was just after, when I was healing from my traumatic brain injury, I did Yosemite National Park on my husband and my honeymoon. That was a road trip for 6 months. Anyways, we hiked there, and that was the first hike I had done since my accident, which made it the hardest ever, with pain in my head and the tears down my face and everything. So it's like, this hike that we were going to do shouldn't have taken a whole day, but for me it did. And what helped me so much was that the people that were passing me on the trail could see that I was in so much pain, and that I was, you know, crying and really frustrated with myself. And they were saying, oh, you got this, you almost there, oh, you only have this much left, or something. So it really helped when I needed that. Yeah. And then my husband and my dog, I had told them that they'd go ahead without me, because I had to wait. I had to rest so much, and I didn't want to hold them back. So they went to the top, and then they came back down to me, and then we all went back. We went to the top. So it was nice. And then seeing that view, oh, that was the best.
Yeah.
Started getting older, we actually did the Trolltunge in Norway. It's a really famous hike there. And we had one of those dog bags for him, so we could carry him as well, because we figured he was going to get tired. And oh, he fell asleep in that bag on the way down.
Oh, is that, it's like a backpack, or is it a front carry?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, backpack, because he was an Australian cattle dog.
Oh, nice. That's really cool. So how did you get into starting your travel blog?
Yeah, so I actually started that as more of a personal journal that was on the internet. And then it evolved into more of a travel blog, I think, after a year or two. And then it's kind of been on and off. And it's just more the past couple years I've been more focused on it and was like, oh, this is, I can help so many people with doing this and showing them the way that I took and my experiences and helping people live those kind of experiences.
So do you think travel is only for people who have a lot of money, or can you really make this work if you're on a budget?
I think travel is for anyone that really wants to do it. So I don't think people need to think of money as, oh, I need that to travel or not, because there are so many ways to travel with barely anything. There's couch surfing, there's woofing, and woofing is where you go to someone's property or house and you're going to work for them for so many hours out of the week or something like that. They have it set up, however, and sometimes you can even get free meals with them. So there are so many different ways to look into doing this. There's even, what is it, where you can stay at someone's house, where you swap houses and things like that. And yeah, there are loads of things nowadays.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. So are there resources for some of these things that you've mentioned, like woofing? I mean, is there like an app? I mean, how does that work?
So woofing and couch surfing, I think they both have their own website. So you can just go on Google and Google it. The same with just finding, I mean, if you really like animals and things like that, you can volunteer at sanctuaries. And then there's always the Red Cross. They do a lot of things in other countries, so you can also volunteer for them. There's also what Nurses Across Borders. There are loads of different ways of making this work.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I never thought about that, about volunteering.
Yeah.
So a lot of these volunteer opportunities, they have like places where you can stay, I assume. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so cool.
Yep.
I never thought about that. That sounds great. Mm-hmm. So you're in Sweden now for the indefinite future. And I noticed that on your website, you have this law in Sweden. Can you tell us what that is?
Yes, it is my favorite law. It's Allemansrätten. And with this law, you have the freedom to roam in nature. So that means you can stay in nature up to 2 days, and you have to be, I think it's about 800 meters from a building. So all you need to do is be respectful to the nature and don't break off branches from live trees. Take the dead branches on the ground if you're going to make a fire. But yeah, pretty awesome.
That's neat. I think we kind of have that in the US with like the BLM, you know, where you can go on to BLM and you can stay, but I think it's still limited to like 14 days, but that's pretty much anywhere within like the national forests and the US and the BLM. I think, I'm not sure if the BLM is different, but I always try to camp in BLM because you don't have to pay. It's just free.
Yeah. That makes it nice. Yeah. Sweden, the national parks and the nature reserves, you only can camp in specific areas there because they're trying to preserve the nature. But yeah, everywhere else is free reign.
Awesome. So how many countries have you traveled to?
I've been to over 20 now.
Wow, that's awesome. out of all of your traveling to internationally, have you run into any strange like customs or traditions that were, you know, that you were surprised to find that maybe they weren't in the books that you just discovered by accident?
Hmm. So when I was in Cambodia, I went there with my niece and I found out that after I did it, I found out that it's rude to say no thank you when someone's trying to give you something. And out of, you know, being nice. Well, there was this older lady that was trying to give me roasted crickets. And I just kept saying, oh, no, thank you. No, thank you. And then it was after that I learned, oh, that was very, very rude of me, where I should have just taken them and then maybe chucked them or something.
You didn't eat the crickets? I mean, stuff them in your pockets. Mm-hmm. I think I would have. Yeah. I don't think I could eat crickets. I guess I could eat crickets if I was hungry, but If there was chicken or crickets, I would definitely pick the chicken. So what about the kindest people that you ran into? In which country?
I would have to say that would have to be in Bolivia. And I mean, so many people know that that's a very poor country. And I think that's probably why they're probably the nicest. It was me and this American girl that I had met and an Australian lady. We were a bit lost. And so we were asking a Bolivian, oh, where can we find whatever we were looking for at the time? And so she was all dressed up in a business suit and everything. She brought us to a restaurant or a place to get food, ordered us some food for to go, and then showed us the way we needed to go. And I was just like, oh, like, thank you. She just went out of her way. And we didn't even say we needed food. It was just added bonus.
That's really sweet. Very generous and kind. Yeah. And unexpected too. Sometimes those kind of like spreading the joy moments are really nice, especially when they're unexpected. Yeah. Did you have any, since we're talking about food, did you have any weird food customs that you ran into or interesting ones or good ones or?
So I like to go to street markets because that is cheap food and it's local and it usually is really yummy. Well, I was, yeah, that was also in Cambodia. I'm a vegetarian. And when I was there, I was also a vegetarian. So I tried explaining that to the girl. So I showed her the Lonely Planet guide, where it has little cheat sheets of how you say it and how it's written. So I showed her that. And she's like, uh-huh, yeah. And I'm like, okay, she understands. Well, she made me roasted up worms with vegetables or something. And so she genuinely was looking at me just to see if I liked the food. And I was like, oh no, I have to now. And so I like ate half of it and my stomach is just turning the whole time I'm doing it. And then I finally finished. And I was like, oh, thank you. And she's just like smiling, nodding her head. And I'm just like, oh man.
I just ate worms. Awesome. Well, I guess that's part of traveling. You get to eat some strange stuff, right? But to them, you know, that's normal. You know, like that's protein, right? Mm-hmm. And you're still here to tell the tale.
Yep.
Yeah. Did you ever have any like scary encounters traveling where you were really worried about a situation or you got lost or, you know, anything like that?
I think my most scariest stories are all from the U.S. So when I was on that road trip with my husband, I think we were actually in where was that? I think it was probably near Death Valley, like outside of there in some of the small towns. Well, we wanted to stop our van and just sleep for a little bit. This local guy came up with his gunshot behind him and a couple dogs in his truck. And he said, you guys can't stay here. And I was sleeping at the time. And my husband's like, okay. And so we left because that's pretty threatening.
Right. Yeah. He wasn't handing out free food.
No.
Yeah, I can see that as the U.S. being kind of a scary place. I think that maybe some international people don't really understand how scary the U.S. can be in certain areas. And it's not all just picture perfect. And it's kind of, I don't know, there's some sketchy things going on here, too. I think it's probably everywhere in the world, but definitely it's here for sure. Yeah, so yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I think here in Sweden, they like, well, at least some of the friends I know like to point out how many serial killers there are in the U.S. And then they're like, look at Sweden. They haven't had one for, I think, since the 60s or something.
All I'm going to say to that is that you know of.
Yeah, that's very true.
So however, far.
Yeah. However, it's also, you know, Sweden is 10 million people for the whole country. So the U.S. is quite big.
Yeah, well, and that, and Americans love to talk about true crime, so it's probably way more highlighted here. We love our true crime podcasts and our stories. I have to admit, I love to listen to a good mystery. So I think it just makes me feel like, okay, I'm normal. I'm pretty normal. There's some really messed up people out there. But yeah, so yeah, definitely. So tell us about your website, and you have a travel planning assistance, I think, program or something that I noticed. If you could tell us about that, and you have a shop on there. You're an author. So fill us in.
Sure. So my website is misfitwanders.com. And that's where you can find more about hikes and outdoor adventures in Sweden, along with other countries. And what you were talking about is sustainable travel. And what I do is I'm expert in that. So I have one-on-one sessions with people, and I help them plan their trips in a sustainable way when they want to travel. And I can also help them find, you know, if they're on a budget, like I was telling you, all of these different alternatives on when you're traveling. So that's kind of all combined. And then if someone wants me to help them make an itinerary, then it's usually more than just one session. And then my shop, it's a lot of gear for outdoors or just wearing daily. I have some water bottles in there because I always push, and I seem to always have my water bottle on me at hand, because having, you know, the water bottle instead of buying plastic bottles, it makes such a big difference. Just that little thing. Let's see. You mentioned me being an author. Okay. I wrote a children's picture book, The Lost Little Dragon. And that is, you can find that at Amazon or Barnes and Noble. And it's about this little dragon who thinks he can do anything all on his own. And he gets stuck in a storm and flies far away from home and ends up getting a hurt wing. So then he's stuck. So now he has to figure out how to get home and how to ask for help. So it's interesting.
I love
and then, oh.
that. Aww. I love kids' books too. I'm a mom. So I always love like little kids' books. They're so fun. Yeah, so I'll definitely check that out. Do you have another book planned for The Adventures of Your Little Dragon?
No, at the moment, I'm actually working on another book, but it has nothing to do with the children's picture book. So this one is more, it's a loosely based book about my traumatic brain injury. So the stories and everything around the traumatic brain injury is more like stories from other people and other things I've heard along the way. So it's set in a narrative tone, so people get to kind of relive my experience, which it's pretty intense. But the reason I'm doing this is I want to inspire people that they can overcome their obstacles in life. Like, look at me. I started off from not being able to walk, having a horrible equilibrium where I just fall over in darkness. And now I can actually do yoga, which I'm really excited about. And I can walk in dark rooms and I can walk.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I'm so glad that you're normalizing it and talking about it. I know we have a lot of nonprofits over here in the States for traumatic brain injuries, especially in the winter sports industry. I was trying to think who that was. It'll come to me. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes. But there's a guy that locally from where I'm at in Colorado, and he started a traumatic brain injury nonprofit. And I will look that up for the show notes, and I'll put that if anyone's interested. Do you have any resources like that? If you do, you can just let me know and I can put them in the show notes.
Yeah, I actually was on a podcast recently, and she pointed out to me that, oh, did you ever reach out to any traumatic brain injury groups on Facebook? And that just blew my mind. I never even thought about reaching out to all these different groups specifically for traumatic brain injuries. I mean, I was dealing with my own, and just to try to think properly, it was for 2 years, I didn't feel like me. So I just was so foggy and upset and couldn't figure out. I knew I was missing something, but I couldn't figure out what or how to get it back. So that I think it's really hard to think about anything other than just what you don't have, I guess, in a way. But I had this mindset. That's how I became where I am today, is I kept telling myself, this isn't me. Like, this isn't real. This is not my future. This is only a small obstacle or a small part of what I have to deal with to get where I am supposed to be in my life.
And that's resilience.
Yeah. Or stubbornness, I call it that.
It could be that too. A little bit of that too. I think that's part of resilience, actually. Not settling that your future is written down, that there's some flexibility there, and it's all in your own grasp. Well, I wanted to thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your experience.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks for listening today to another great episode. I sure enjoy hearing about these experiences, and I hope you do also. Be sure and like or follow this show by leaving a 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. If you have an experience or story you'd like to share, be sure and reach out to verbalecho@gmail.com. See you in the next episode, friends. Have a great week.